Possibly one of the items that we could talk about or discuss would be water, chemically known as H2O, but really welcome to all the people who daily use it. As you know, without it, life would no longer exist. I do believe that it is in a critical stage of supply in some areas, as we know, and a precious product, just as oil is for energy purposes. My reason for choosing water as our opening topic
is because I did work
with the city of Monroe from 1940 to 1976, at which time I retired, and of course I picked up a little bit about the water supply and so on. Not a whole lot, but some anyway. When I was about 6 years old, I can recall going to different wells on street corners in the city to get a bucket of water. I recall a well on the corner of 7th and Adams Street, another one on the corner of Harrison and 6th, as well as many others located in various points around town. The first public water supply that my folks had in their home was in 1922, roughly, when Dad built a new house on West 6th Street. Going back a little farther, and this is at the beginning of our public water supply, your great-great-grandfather had one of the first services installed in the city of Monroe, located on the Pleasant Street, where the Raider Brewery then stood. According to the records in the water department, which I scrutinized and listed a few years back, he did have the first service from the Monroe Water Supply Company at that time, and it was installed in 1889. At that time, when the brewery was in operation, they took the ice from Plum Creek and stored it underground in a building for use during the summer months. Of course, today we have refrigeration, which does away with all ice cutting operations of the past. Water at that time was not polluted as we know it today. Two other fellows and myself would quite frequently, in the 20s, I'm talking about the 1920s now, take the urban trolley car from town to Lake Erie and go swimming in the afternoon, particularly on a Thursday afternoon, when the stores were closed and we were free to do what we wished. And the urban, as it was called, or interurban, traversed from Toledo to Monroe and then to Detroit, proceeding on Monroe Street to where the Broadway Market is now, and then cutting diagonally eastward and then toward Detroit. I recall the water was so clear that you would throw a coin in and you could see it laying there just as plain as day, except for after a storm when the water would be churned up to some degree. The city of Monroe purchased the water supply supply from the water, Monroe Water Company, in approximately 1918, and then rehabilitated the plant and provided filters for the purification process. At that time, lead was used mainly for services, although cast iron main was in use for the main lines. As time went by, copper tubing came into being and was used extensively until the Second World War, when it was in short supply. After using some lead for a while during the Second World War, they reverted back to copper until about 1965 or 1970, and then it was used to some degree, but plastic was also used. Plastic has a beneficial effect when it comes to being in certain types of soil, where copper, in some instances, deteriorated and had to be replaced. In about 1955, the first long main extension was made, going to the infirmary, which is known by some other name today. I don't know if it's Fairview or what, but it's right across from the fairgrounds. Extension of mains beyond the city limits was held up for a number of years, for the reason that the city fathers felt if they wished the water, they should become a part of the city and be annexed. But finally, in about 1964, the city fathers gave in and extended the water without annexation. The original capacity of the plant when it was taken over by the city was in the vicinity of 2 million gallons per day. And then in 1951, it was increased to 4 million gallons per day. Extending the mains beyond the city created another problem as the years went by, and in 1970 another bond issue of $2 million was made in order to increase its capacity from 4 million to a maximum of about 12 million gallons per day. Lab technicians are at work around the clock in order to be sure that the water you are drinking is safe. A number of chemicals are purchased, some of which are very costly. Just to mention a few, there's lime, chlorine, sodium fluoride, which prevents tooth decay and began in about 1955 to be used. And then, of course, there is a product known as activated carbon, which to some degree controls the taste, or shall I say bad taste, that sometimes comes about both in the spring and in the fall. Unknown to most customers or citizens is the fact that the water on the bottom of the lake comes to the surface and the water at the top goes to the bottom twice a year, namely spring and fall. And this is what disturbs the taste of the water, to quite a degree. Originally, the intake for the water plant came across through Consolidated Land Company property and extended into Lake Erie by this, what is known as the State Park cut. In 1951, the intake was rerouted. I shouldn't really say rerouted. Another intake was built, a 36-inch intake line of reinforced concrete that traverses North Dixie Highway to where it intersects with Stony Point Road. Then east on Stony Point Road and extends beyond the road, the terminus of the road, into Lake Erie, approximately 1,500 feet. It so happens that with the construction of this new intake line beyond Stony Point, we now have an alternate route which can be used in case one or the other line becomes damaged. The original intake line now serves the residential area of the beaches on the southern extremity, while the other mains were built off of existing mains that terminated at the city limits. Well, let's turn to another topic. I would have graduated in 1930, but instead I stayed out of school a year, my senior year, and worked. It was difficult to find any work at that time, but I did get 35 cents an hour while the St. Mary's Academy was being constructed. Well, at that time, we bought 3 quarts of strawberries for a quarter, 3 pounds of hamburg for a quarter, and a bushel of tomatoes could be purchased for 50 cents. I finished high school the following year, in 1931, and then later worked at the steel company, which was known as Newton Steel at that time. I thought I was in rich man's paradise after working there a while, when I received $135 a month. But land knows how many hours I worked each month, too. There were no restrictions as to 8 hours a day or 6 days a week. We worked 7 days a week, sometimes for 2 months in a row, without any overtime pay. Then your grandma was working at that time, too, and she was earning $25 a week. So between the two of us, we were sitting on top of the world financially compared to others who were really hard up. Yes, there was a serious depression at that time, and people were begging for work. They'd do anything for a buck or two. In 1929, the armory, which was located at 2nd and Washington, the present site of the Michigan Bell Telephone Company, burned to the ground. And likewise, St. Mary's Academy that same year. The following year, the construction of dams in the River Raisin took place, as well as the widening of Monroe Street. Many houses were moved back on the north side of the river, all the way from Elm Avenue to beyond Lorraine Street. In fact, there is one house between Noble and Lorraine that still practically abuts the sidewalk, where the owner refused to move it, even though the state had insisted it be moved. Following the widening of Monroe Street and the construction of the dams in the River Raisin, which were completed in 1936, many young people enjoyed the recreational time spent on the of ice skating on the River Raisin. It was floodlighted at night, and they really had people out on the river enjoying it during the winter months. The construction of the dams also helped in another respect, and that was, to a great degree, the elimination of flooding in the floodplain along the river. I recall one time coming back from the steel mill, and the boats were in use on Elm Avenue at the corner of Macomb, Tremont, Lincoln, in fact all the way up to about Arbor Avenue. Front Street was also flooded, and of course the water would back up at that time and into the sewers and go back into the basements of the houses, causing much damage. In 1936, the city was ordered by the state of Michigan to construct a wastewater treatment plant for the treatment of sewage, and this was completed in 1937 or 1938. Of course, since that time, there have been two expansions to the plant, and one is presently being completed. After its original construction, the only wastes that were treated were from residential areas within the city of Monroe. But later, as water was extended beyond the city limits, and they desired sewers, it increased the effluent to the extent that additional capacity was necessary. Considerable controversy has existed over the disposal of the solids at the wastewater plant. A farmer by the name of McBee, who lived on the farm at North Custer and Raisin, not Raisinville, but Ida Mabee Road, insisted that the solids which were removed from the wastewater plant were excellent for use as a fertilizer. This is common practice in many European countries, but the state of Michigan has refused to permit, as well as adjacent farmers have continually criticized the use of it for one reason or another, not necessarily for the effluent getting into the wells, but from a standpoint of the odor that was prevalent. Monroe does have a different problem from most cities in that we have the paper mills, which contributed an enormous amount of paper waste and made it more difficult for the personnel to treat the effluent. Well, Jim, I think that's just about enough on that subject. Let's go on to another subject, which is maybe a little bit more interest. The purchase of automobiles. Your grandma bought a 1928 Chrysler for $785. One of the sharpest at that time that could be bought, really. And after we were married, we purchased a two-door Plymouth for around $700. I drove that for a long time, though, before I ever got another one. Then we bought some used cars, but in 1950, we bought a two-door Ford for around $1,000, as I recall. Of course, since then, you know what's happened. I don't know how many more I'm going to be able to buy, to tell you the truth. This last one was listed at 6,300 and something. Of course, I didn't pay that much. I got it what I thought was at a bargain price. In fact, the amount you paid for your car would have bought a brand new one in those days. The other thing that I wanted to mention was that, of course, the new high school that you're presently in was just completed in 1976. And I was one of the first to occupy the previous high school building at the corner of Washington and Fifth, now known as Junior High. It was completed in 1928 or 29. And prior to that time, two buildings occupied the site, and they were known as Union Schools. These were public schools, one for the lower grade, I believe, and the other one for the higher grades. But with the construction of the high school, Macomb Street was closed off, and that property was purchased for school purposes. There is one thing, though, that I do wish to say, and that is this. We have a wonderful school system, and we still have, and I think our education is most important for the furtherance of good citizenship, and I cannot speak too highly for those that were our instructors at the time I attended. My hat off to all of them.